Radio Borders Youth Association. Good afternoon, everyone. You are listening to the sound of universal compassion. Please enjoy.
This show is brought to you by the Buddhist Youth Association every Sunday, bringing Buddhism to the community of the Waikato. We also give away a range of free English or Chinese Buddhism books, MP3 or tapes on Buddhism. If you'd like one, please send a letter with $3 worth of stamps in an envelope to P.O. Box 82146, Highland Park, Howick, Auckland. Or you can phone 09271 3377. Buddhist Youth Association. Respectful, beneficial, empowering. Welcome to the program today. I hope you've had a fruitful and pleasant week. How much did you think about your death this week? Now, if you're new to the program, that might be a startling question. But if you've been following the program, thinking about death has been your homework, hasn't it? Over the last few weeks, we've been talking about the importance of considering death if we want to follow a spiritual path. Of course, if you have no interest in what comes after death, or you are of the firm view that you will just dissolve into nothingness after dying, you will probably not see any benefit in considering the end of this life at all. But if we do not simply disappear after death, if we do live on in some way, and what we then experience depends on what we do now in this particular life, it's very important to think about death. Most Buddhists, of course, believe in past and future lives, and that each life and its experiences depend on the actions the individual created in previous lives. Therefore, it is vital to think of life in terms of its end, death, for how we decide to live our life will determine what we experience in the death process and afterwards. The Buddhist master and author Namgyal Pel says in his text, Mind Training Like the Rays of the Sun, as the ripening fruit of past actions, you will be completely abandoned. In accordance with your new actions, you will be seized by the Lord of Death. Nothing but your virtues and misdeeds will escort you. Since all will return to their destinies, no one will accompany you. Understanding this, please practice well. Now, have we created positive mental imprints or negative? Whatever they are, they will be our companions through the death process, and nothing else will. So if we want good companions, we need to train our mind in positivity and practice to the best of our ability now. Namgyal Pel also goes on to quote the letter to Chandra Raja by Sri Jagatramita, which says, even if you possess the wealth of a god, in the next world after your death, you will be as one attacked in a barren land, alone, deprived of princes and queens, with no clothes and bereft of friends, dispossessed of kingdom and castle, although you may have great power and strength. Nothing is to be seen, nothing heard, not one single person can follow you. In short, when not even your name will then exist, what else is there to say? In our discussion of mind training like the rays of the sun over the last few programs, we've gone over the 9-point death meditation that forms one of the preliminary practices mentioned by the author Namgyal Pel. If you've been with us, you may remember the first 3 points are that death is inevitable, it is coming even closer, and we've spent precious little time preparing for it. We might have written a will, taken out insurance and so on, but actually contemplating death, its inevitability and its inexorable approach doesn't even cross our mind. Even though not knowing when we will die, we might be right now living out our very last day in this lifetime. The uncertainty of the time of death is the main point of the second 3 in the 9-point death meditation. The other 2, as we went through them, are that there are a multitude of agents of death in our environment, and our body is not well equipped to deal with them. Diseases, car accidents, muggings, and natural disasters are all common occurrences, but even the things that are supposed to keep us alive can bring about death, like food with a bit of salmonella, or a house in an earthquake. The point is well made in a report of a near-death experience by an engineer who was walking to work in a snow-filled park one day. The report is one of the near-death experience stories on the website of the International Association of Near-Death Studies, that's IANS, but it gives no details of the reporter, not even whether male or female. The report goes like this. On an early winter morning, I was unexpectedly attacked by a stranger in the attempt to rape and perhaps kill me. He didn't tell me he would kill me, but somehow I believed he would. He started pulling me aside, and we began fighting. I'd never had a serious fight in my life before, and actually I was very inefficient. My winter coat prevented me from moving easily, and his thick clothes were protecting him from my hits. Soon his hands clenched around my neck, and he began to strangle me. He was much stronger. I couldn't get out, no matter how hard I tried. I realized that the last seconds of my life were now ticking out. Hard to tell how terrifying it was. I expected to lose consciousness, to run out of air or blood in the brain, but somehow I didn't. Next, I saw myself in a different place, but it was not hazy or unsteady like dreams or fantasies are. It felt very realistic, as real as the reality we live in. The place seemed very appalling from the very first moment. To me, it looked like a huge abyss, maybe as big as the cosmos. I think it had no boundaries and extended indefinitely to all directions. It was very dark, and yet I could see in it. Unlike the cosmos, there was absolutely nothing in it. No stars, no lights, no other objects or beings. It seemed that I'd be its only inhabitant if I ended up in that place. I was not afraid of being alone, but there was something else that made the place very unpleasant. For lack of a better word, I would call it cold. Not a physical cold. It was not evil or threatening. Nobody was lurking there. On the contrary, something very essential was absent, missing in the place. That's why it felt so bad and unpleasant. From the beginning of the attack, I was overwhelmed with horror. But seeing where I thought I was going to end up just added to it. I think subjectively that I stayed in the place for several seconds. My next thought was that I didn't want to go there by any means and that I wanted very much to live. Desperately in my mind, I screamed for help, although it was just my instinct. I didn't really expect any help. There was nobody around in the park, and since I was not religious, it didn't even occur at the moment to address any gods or spirits. Then I was back again in our reality, fighting. I can't say anything about the transition between the void and the reality because I didn't notice anything extraordinary. In fact, at that time, I hadn't even heard about the void, and for a long time after the event, believed that the abyss could be an hallucination caused by immense stress, or maybe the lack of oxygen. So I was back and realized that the man was not strangling me anymore. Suddenly I got an idea. I should try biting him. It worked. Soon I succeeded grabbing his palm with my teeth. With all my strength plus fear, I injured him, caused pain, and our fight quickly ended. He let me go. There were a few more developments at the end of the story, but I'm not sure if they're relevant to the NDE. NDE here means death, near-death experience, of course. Now, this might be an interesting parallel of what might be in the Buddhist cosmology be counted as a cold hell, but the beginning of the story serves to show us how unexpectedly we can meet death. When you got up out of bed this morning, did you think, today on my way to work, I could be mugged to death by some deranged stranger I've never met? Probably not, although the possibility is always there. However, before I scare you so much that you quickly tune in to a music channel, let's set our motivation for the program as we always do. As usual, let's aim for bodhicitta. That is, may this program become a cause for our enlightenment so we can benefit all other beings, especially in their search for liberation and enlightenment. Then, with such a vast motivation bolstering our minds, we might be more ready to look death a little closer in the eye. Thank you. Near-death experiences have become almost commonplace in our global society. Some are blissful and some are frightening, like the one we've just quoted. But most seem to share the characteristic that they profoundly change the lives of those who've experienced them. On his blog, David Michie is described as, and I quote, the internationally best-selling author of a number of books about mindfulness, meditation, and Buddhism. These include the non-fiction titles Why Mindfulness is Better Than Chocolate, Hurry Up and Meditate, and Buddhism for Busy People, as well as his popular novel series, The Dalai Lama's Cat. His books are available in 25 languages in over 30 different countries. Michi is also a keynote speaker at seminars and conferences on mindfulness and meditation, and has written articles for publications like The Daily Telegraph, USA Today, and The Australian. On his blog, davidmichi.com, he has an article titled, What Can We Learn from Near-Death Experiences? It goes like this. Near-death experiences, or NDEs, have always been with us, but in the past 30 years, as resuscitation techniques have become much more effective, especially after heart attacks, reports of NDEs have become more widespread. The sheer volume of cases has given rise to significant research by eminent medical specialists and researchers such as Raymond Moody, Kenneth Ring, Michael Sabom, and Bruce Grayson. Their key findings are very helpfully summarized by Pim van Lommel, MD, in his illuminating book, Consciousness Beyond Life. Understanding the death process is of critical importance in Tibetan Buddhism, and I'm always interested to learn what well-informed researchers outside the tradition have to say on the subject. One vital qualification is that the Western definition of death, broadly the termination of all physical functioning, is not the same as the Tibetan Buddhist definition, which holds that subtle consciousness continues to be present in the body, though in most cases for just a short time after physical functioning ends. It's only once this subtle consciousness is no longer present that a person is considered to have died. There are interesting parallels between NDE reports of recent decades and the Tibetan Buddhist understanding of the death process. To use just one example, in his book Peaceful Death, Joyful Rebirth, Tulku Tondup says, it's very important to know that not all dying people have the same experiences or have them in the same sequence. Pim van Lommel similarly observes, in summary, there's no such thing as a classic near-death experience or a classic way of dealing with it. The purpose of this blog is not to explore NDEs themselves so much as the effect that having an NDE has on a person. What can we learn from this? Pim van Lommel notes, irrespective of the immediate cause of a near-death experience, its survivors display permanent and fundamental change in their outlook on life, religious beliefs, values, and behavior. David Michie continues, a study comparing the life changes of 86 cardiac arrest survivors who had had an NDE with a control sample who hadn't 2 years after their heart attack provides some startling trends. Fear of death had declined by 47% among those experiencing an NDE, compared to a decline of 16% among those who hadn't. An appreciation of money and possessions similarly declined by 47% among the NDE sample, compared with a 25% decline among the control sample. Understanding the purpose of life increased by 52% for the NDE people, compared to 25% for the control panel. And wanting to help others increased by 26% for NDEers, compared to 8% for non-NDEers. People who have an NDE show a markedly increased interest in spirituality. Looking at figures 8 years after their heart attack, NDEers' interest in spirituality had increased by 42%, compared to a decrease of 41% for non-NDEers. Significantly, as Westerners who have experienced an NDE, they did not pursue this interest within their church. NDEers' church attendance declined by 42% 8 years on, compared to an increase of 25% in church attendance among those who hadn't experienced an NDE. These are just a few headline statistics arising from one single, if important, study. What they show is that for most people, having a near-death experience is transformative. Having a direct, undeniable, first-hand experience of consciousness continuing after the Western definition of death profoundly changes the way we view life. Our priorities shift. Material concerns become of less importance than interacting positively with others and living with greater compassion for those around us. In the words of Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, author of the groundbreaking On Death and Dying, we discover that spiritual growth is the sole purpose of our life here on earth. Now, in my limited reading of near-death experiences, I've found that people who have had them are not all that keen to share them. Near-death experiences can appear to be so out there as experiences, so far from our usual day-to-day workings, that NDEers might be afraid of how they will be perceived by others if they relate what they had gone through. Or perhaps the experience is too intensely personal to be liberally scattered among all and sundry. So often the reports are quite sketchy. However, some NDEers are not afraid and are quite happy to talk about their experiences. Again, from the IONS website, here is one that goes into quite a lot of detail and it graphically makes the point of how transformative the experience, which involved a great deal of physical pain, was. It goes like this. My NDE was the most important event of my life, and it can be described as intense, as been written in capitals. One day, after my 20th birthday, I was hit head-on by a car while I was riding a bicycle without a helmet. My forehead touched the windshield, and in that nanosecond, 20 years of life experience meditated in me and released me to void. Then my soul chose to come back. And this is an ultra-condensed version of my story, which has shaped my life. Choosing to live and integrating as a new soul, choosing to live in caps again. I was in design school in Savannah, Georgia, paying my way through school with a competitive swimming scholarship. I was in my sophomore year. Swimming was my life, or so I thought. Timing is everything with this. My 20th birthday was February the 25th. The departure for the NAIA National Swim Meet was February 27th, where I earned the money to put myself through college. Around 1:45 p.m. on February 26th of 2007, I was riding my bicycle, helmetless, from one class to another. I turned across traffic to go left, but a black SUV was speeding at me coming from the opposite direction, very fast. I tried to turn back into my lane, but the SUV came way too fast. I met the grille of the SUV straight on the driver's side. When my hands first hit, time slowed down about 40 times. I saw the bicycle wheel exploding in the air. I saw my hands shatter and dislocate. I felt my knees hit as my upper body went over the hood, and my lower body went into a scorpion position behind me, knees breaking, bicycle shattering. I was flying towards the windshield near 60 miles per hour. I could see the reflections of the trees and the sun in the glass. I could see the face of the woman driving the car and her tense push against the steering wheel as she was hitting the brakes. Octave by octave, I was registering time slowing down, slowing down, slowing down. My head was aiming straight at the windshield in line with the driver's face. At that exact moment, my head just began to touch the windshield right near the hairline at about a 45-degree angle, third eye, crown chakra point, with just the softest touch, and I was launched straight into time unraveling. I saw time approach absolute zero, but it did not freeze. The first thing I saw was myself from spherical, 360 surround, out-of-body vision, seeing from all sides and angles, in and out of my body all at once. And there I was, pinned against that SUV windshield, forehead first, with scorpion position behind me. I felt recognition that it was an initiation. I could instantaneously see my body from spherical outer body vision, like having cameras 30 feet outside myself, looking in at all angles. Then I unraveled. I was sucked out of the moment into a warm void. The first memory I came into was being pulled out of my mother's womb in a hospital. I relived, meditated upon, and subsequently unattached from every experience I'd ever perceived. From breastfeeding, to playing at school, to kittens, to imagination, to puberty, to learning about science, being part of a family, loving another for the first time. Every perception I'd ever had, including accomplishments, ambitions, feelings, and subconscious perception, all came into this new meditative space, and I was given the opportunity to detach from each, and I could not say no. I was not very spiritual before my NDE. I was fairly reserved, introverted, creative. But when I hit that SUV windshield, I became someone who was tied to this rule of unattachment. As I dissolved every moment of my life chronologically, I came all the way up to the present moment and saw myself hitting the windshield in the now, and I was unattached from that. When that happened, the experience became more profound. I became unattached from gravity, mass, electricity, as I somehow perceived myself getting zipped through the universe back into some sort of black hole or the initial Big Bang or something. I now understand this place has been referenced as the void. I was nothing but a figment of knowledge that I was something out in the timeless space. I was there for what I now perceived as eternity. I had no human senses, no language-based thoughts, no perception of anything other than that I existed. When I somehow knew the I existed, the next huge wave of information came in. And I will say that 6 years later, I am still uncovering everything that I was given, perceived, in that affirmation of presence out in the void. What I will describe here is a matter of soul. The wave of information was by far the fastest and most intense thing I perceived in the entire NDE experience. When the affirmation of existence presence happened, I saw a tiny speck of white light appear very distantly. At the same time, I felt myself being pulled between the white light and the opposite side of the dark, like being a conductor caught perfectly between two magnets, the event horizon. I knew that the tiny white light was my life, and I knew in the void moment that the void pull was death. I had no emotions, no language, no thoughts, no human senses. I just knew that one was life and one was death. And then I knew I had a choice, that the tiniest amount of movement from where the whatever I was would pull me one way or the other. At the same time, I perceived the question. I saw my presence spawn a tiny white light, maybe spherical in form. At that moment, I somehow decided to nudge towards life, again in capitals. I saw my singular sphere burst into two and into an infinite mitosis of shapes that while forming was being launched through the reattachment of all my life's memories. It was like being blasted 100 million miles per hour of every single memory through a wormhole. And it felt like a tube, a direct path, a wormhole. There were other beings along this wormhole too. I felt all sorts of beings graze me as I flew through them. I felt angels, deceased family members I'd never known, extraterrestrial things, all sorts of spirits. It's mind-boggling to recall. And it felt like a tube, a direct path, a wormhole. It was an instant re-extrapolation of my entire identity as a human personality, combined with a flash taste of a spirit world I was not previously aware of. I came back to here, Earth. I came all the way back to the moment. I could see my body from all sides, inside and outside from any possible vantage point. It was amazing, and again he's put it in capitals. My body was pinned against this SUV windshield in this nanosecond, forehead touching, body scorpion behind me. However, unlike before when I'd left my body and went to the void, I saw the electromagnetic field surrounding most everything, but especially my body, most especially my head, neck and brain. In this frozen nanosecond, I knew that I had come back to Earth to affirm my decision to live. In that nanosecond, I simply activated my intention to remain stiff and strong in my head, neck, and brain, so as to break the windshield with my impulse instead of having the windshield break me. At the moment that intention came, time came out of near absolute zero back to maybe 10 times slow speed. I broke the windshield, putting a hole in it with my head and bouncing up into the air, feet flipping up and over me. The SUV was braking, and I was flying through the air, screaming inside, maybe outside too, I'm not sure. But I was conscious. I remember landing on top of the rear driver's side corner of the SUV as it finally came to a stop. Next, I remember thudding on top of the metal roof and feeling the metal as if I'd never felt metal before. Then the car jerked back as they do when a car stops, and it flung me off onto the pavement. I hit the pavement on my back, and I remember feeling the pavement as if it were my very first time. I even remember sensing the earth below the pavement, the living, breathing earth underneath, and even as the pavement. It filled my heart, and for a moment, I was still. Then, finally, time resumed normal speed, and I started screaming. My head was filled with glass. There was blood everywhere. I couldn't see. I had shooting pains down my spine. My hands were mangled. I was screaming my mother's name, my swim coach's name, my girlfriend's, and even my own name, amongst all sorts of babble. That went on for some minutes before paramedics came. I had calmed a bit. I remember I was bleeding so much from my head I couldn't see out of my eyes. But when they finally got me on a bodyboard and my bleeding slowed, they were asking me questions. I began to see out of my eyes, and I connected eyes with this younger African-American paramedic. It was like no gaze I had ever shared with another soul. I was dumbstruck in his eyes. I bled more while they put me in the ambulance. I'm not sure if it was the same paramedic, but in the ambulance, as my eyes were cleared of blood again, I gazed into a young African-American paramedic's eyes. He looked right at me and said, "You're a miracle," and something along the lines of, "No normal person would have lived through that." As the shock was really setting in, he injected me with morphine, and I went away to the hospital. One by one, friends and swim coaches were visiting me, all totally overwhelmed. Two shattered thumbs, a broken knee, and enough glass in my head to mosaic a coffee table obviously rendered incapable of swimming the big meet, which I thought was the most important event of my life. I had been gifted a complete and hyper-aware meeting with fate, and my destiny has changed so dramatically since. I am so eternally grateful. The constant input and remembering of this NDE has been hand in hand with my life purpose ever since. I now feel very strongly that I was given or spawned a second, stronger, clearer soul while in the void. And with that I came to Earth and life with a mission. I'm an incredibly different person now. Extroverted, fiery, intense in almost all ways, and incredibly spiritually, scientifically, and creatively inclined. It is what has propelled me to master the arts of didgeridoo, Tibetan throat singing, love making, yoga, conversation, athleticism, and study. I'm incredibly in love with life, just thrilled to be reveling in the passion and challenge of it all. And that is the lesson I have to teach. How to integrate the old self with my new self. Now for love, lightness, and enthusiasm. I'm so grateful to the point of joy. And joy is written in caps again. It is obviously not a Buddhist approach, but I wonder if we truly contemplate death, truly, we might not also come to appreciate life in the way that this person did through the NDE. Now, in the last 3 points in the 9-point death meditation, we contemplated our body, our friends and relatives, and our possessions cannot help at death time. Only the Dharma can help. Namkar Pal writes, "Contemplating in this way, how ultimately death is certain, its time is uncertain, and at that time, nothing is of any help except the doctrine, resolve to practice it now." Within the holy doctrine, meditation on the awakening mind is the primary practice. Having ascertained this, everything will become a factor of the training in the awakening mind. This show's exploration of death today has inspired you to keep thinking of your own death and what it means for your life. And now we must say goodbye, for our time together is up. Thanks for joining the program today, and I hope you'll do so again next week. Please dedicate any positive potential for the enlightenment of all beings. Thank you, and goodbye.